SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. We'll call it hour three, 4 minutes shy of hour three. And, you know, every time we do those conversations with Sid, I end up, you know, spending the next, I don't know, from noon to to four, just finding other things to read and reach out to. It's amazing. And there was a name, and I'll bring this up with Sid off air, because we don't explore the mayor. You know, the mayors, obviously, you know, they get discussed, but we don't, you know, necessarily, you know, flesh out their careers the same way a lot of times we do the stallions. But when Sid brought up Best in Show as part of War of Wills page, you know, down on the female line, that got me to kind of go back to her. And, you know, she was a broodmare of the year, and, you know, her progeny were just remarkable. And the daughters, you know, have gone on to be incredibly productive. And most notably, and because the name jumped off the page, looking at Best in Show's other daughters, you know, Minnie Hawk is who went on to, you know, lead to War of Will. But Blush with Pride, the blushing groom, Kentucky Oaks winner in 82. Blush with Pride. And I'm not sure why this is the case. And maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just me. But she feels, I have that term, horse is the time forgot. She feels like a horse that time has forgotten for some reason. And, you know, not only did she have a great career, you know, winning the Oaks and the Ashland and more, but then she herself went on and got no less than better than honor. and Mariinsky and so forth and others. I mean, she herself and a horse that has come up recently in all of these conversations about New Mexico, Desert God. Amazing. But yet, am I wrong? Blush with Pride, it's not a name that comes up probably as, and it's what? It's only 35 years ago, right? Well, anyway, so I'm gonna go on with that one. And, of course, Wayne Lucas, trainee. Javier Contreras is back with us, and the story involving Late Night Powwow, now her latest graded stake triumph, the Barbara Fritchie, and her story gets better and better, and she's a filly that should be getting more attention than she is. Javier, congratulations again.
Thank you, appreciate it.
How crazy is this? I mean, she's unbeatable.
It's unbelievable. She's got so much heart. You know, she's got so much heart. She just hates to get beat. It almost looks like it. She, you know, her last race was pretty amazing. I mean, every race he makes it look, you know, so easy sometimes for her. But her last race was pretty amazing. It was close, but she dug in there so hard. I was so amazed.
She, you know, she obviously, you know, now with a third win at Laurel, and this is, you know, this is now, I'm going to lose track, 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 straight wins. But she's 3 for 3 at Laurel, and she is really stamping herself as a seven. Not that she isn't good at six and six and a half and shorter, but right. She's really stamping herself as a 7-furlong monster.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she's got enough speed to go, you know, even shorter a little bit, but we have been keeping her on that distance. She just seems to be so strong. Yeah, so strong in there. So why change anything, you know?
Well, that's absolutely. As you watch this unfold, I mean, is she changing at all? Are you seeing her, you know, become, you know, even better and more polished? I mean, she's 11 for 12.
Yeah, absolutely. She is. You know, she's feel happy after every race. Don't seem like takes a lot out of her, and she's always been a pro, you know. She's always been a pro. I never have any issues with her training, and she loves to train. Definitely loves to train. Of course, now, you know, everybody knows her, and when she's at the track, everybody takes pictures of her, and they know who she is. So she's liking that. She loves the attention of having people around the barn. They all want to come out better and give her carrots and stuff.
So nice.
Yeah, she's amazing.
You know, she's handled everything that's come at her. That includes a muddy track, a sealed sloppy track, the bull ring, a building like Laurel with the long backstretch to be able to one turn mile. And what's amazing at this point, Javier, is she is getting better just very slowly and steadily. It's not like she made some big quantum leap. She just with every start, it feels like she's continuing to improve.
Yes, yes. Hopefully she keeps going.
Yeah. I want to also fold in Freddie in this. Freddie Peltruck, talk about him, because this is, you know, this at this point you'd have to think for a rider like Freddie, this is his big horse.
You know, he's been honored from day one. Freddie, he's the local rider here in Charlestown. He's been on her. He liked her from day one when the babies first come in from the farm. And, they clicked together pretty good.
Were you using him, you know, a fair amount, you know, going into this when her career started?
Yes, he was riding for me. He actually rides almost my whole barn.
There you go.
And, he was riding for me before she even came in the picture.
Well, getting to this point now as a 4-year-old, what do you envision? She came away with a career best buyer out of the Barbara Fritchie. Last year it was the Charlestown Oaks that we talked about and got her first graded stake win. How do you see the season unfolding from here?
Well, we're looking at the Madison in Keeneland for the
nice.
First week of April.
Very nice.
It's a great one. You know, I'm sure it's going to be even tougher, but I think she deserves that. And the owner's thinking about bringing her after the 2019 season. So we probably get to keep her for the rest of the year. And after that, she might be a broodmare.
Well, and obviously, if Breeze Easy, if you can get a grade one, it's only going to further enhance her. I mean, her value is already getting established, but a grade one would be a grade one. It's hard to envision, Javier, how this could have happened, you know, especially when you look back to her maiden win at Charlestown.
Right.
You went 6.5 furlongs that day, but she came away with a 47 buyer, and you think, oh, yeah, okay, that's she went by 6 lengths. But
yeah.
I mean, did you already know that this was going to be a nice horse at whatever level?
I mean, I know that she that she could run. I know that she was nice, but I didn't think she was going to be this nice. I know that I have a decent West Virginia bred. You know, I said, I'm sure we'll go through her conditions here in town and have a little fun. But to become what she is now, you know, I didn't think she had that in it. That early, anyway.
Well,
she steadily and slowly developed.
It's amazing, and you know she is only a half a length. You go back to the beat that she took in April on the Charlestown Classic card, the undercard, in the it's been too long. She got beat half a length, and you're going to have to be like Baffert and say, you know, going back to Arrogate and to American Pharoah. How did we get this horse beat?
Yeah, he was, I mean, I think that I'm going to blame it on me because I run her way back. I mean, way too soon. I know she was fresh and she felt good and everything, but I think running her back in 8 days was not the right move there. It might have cost me a little. It might have cost us the race. You know, that's the only thing I can think of because she had no problems during the race. She had no, I mean, nothing. We just got beat. You know, and the only thing I can think of is, well, that was, I tell everybody, I said, that's on me right there. I called for the Gippy, running her back that quick.
Well, it hasn't hurt in the long term, and you know you kind of regrouped and you went back to a state bred allowance. That was her first encounter on a wet track. Then you faced off against Open Company and a couple of those. Then waded into state bred stakes, and that led us up to the Charlestown Oaks, and that's when she really stamped herself. It became obvious.
Yes, she did. She made a lot of people believers that day.
Absolutely. Exactly. You know, you mentioned the owners, and, you know, when we talked last year about her, you know, she was yours.
Right.
Talk about the sale approach and you know, how many offers you had to field.
Well, it took a while. I mean, I really didn't want to sell her. But Mike, I mean, he made me a very, very good offer. I just couldn't say no. And you know, at that time, and a few other factors included in making the decision. But I think, like in the long run, it's a good decision. You know, we've got new clients. We got a few more horses from them. We're still doing good. So hopefully it helps.
I have one of those expressions when the phone rings. The answer is always yes. There may be a few no's, but ultimately the answer is always yes because you know it's just you have to take money off the table. You just have to survive.
Yeah.
Just a reality.
To survive in this game, yeah.
Well, in the meantime, you get to train her, and you know you win. You do very well anyway. But to have a horse like this come along, it really has to feel special, Javier.
Absolutely, it's just amazing.
Well, and you're maximizing. You know, you're maximizing her. Her potential. That's the part of it that, you know, and you, I imagine have you gotten some clients beyond? I mean, have some people reached out to you with the notoriety that comes with this kind of horse?
You know, a couple of, you know, local people, yeah, but nobody else yet.
No. The way this story's headed, I think there's, you know, let's go over to Keeneland, and there might be some breeders that might want to talk to you around Madison time, right?
It could happen. Why not?
You've done an amazing job with this filly, and
thank you.
I'm kind of surprised there hasn't been more you know, that there hasn't been more made of what, you know, what she's in the process of doing here.
Right, right. Well, let's hope we can come up winners in the next race, and I think that will open up some eyes for real.
Well, you let's know, and, let's take the Madison, winning a Madison would go a long way, because that that's a race that you know, that's a race that will get noticed. You'll be in the spotlight. Let me ask you while I got you too. You got a couple of maidens that could go tonight at Charlestown. What about Dubai Was Lit and Limehouse Louise?
I think they're all right. They'll fit good in there. You know, they're beginners, both of them first time starters. You know, they're about the same level, both of them. You know, they can perform really well. They can, sometimes the lights, you know, the pole leg, night raising is bound to play a little role in there. But I think they should perform very well, both of them.
And then actually you come back again, tomorrow with a pair that you've got entered in a maiden race. The two today are in the fifth race, the maidens tonight. And then tomorrow, Meltek and Katie's Miracle.
Yeah, yeah. I like both of those guys. The reason I'm in, I end up running in the same race, I've been having a hard time getting a straight three-row race to go. Yeah, you know, so they starting to put the three-year-olds in up a little too early, but at least we get to run. But yeah, I like to have those two separated. But what are we going to do? We got to take it as they come.
No doubt. And you know, I know the feeling. Believe me, watching and waiting. how about Ghost Fever in that might be the favorite in the second race tonight?
I like her. She's honest. She always tries. Definitely the right distance for her. And the good thing we have, you know, for the West Virginia Breck program is that running open, we get to run never win two open twice. We get to run them even though if they win three or four West Virginia State Brads races, they are eligible to run never win two. So she won the last time out, the never win two same race. So hope we got the same result.
Well, and you took advantage of that. You took advantage of that with Pow Wow, both times. And then, and how about in the, I think in the sixth, Schlosser with Freddie, the seven in that allowance. And although he's running for the tag.
Yeah, he always tries, and he runs at any distance. And there's, you know, same problem. We have limited races for him. There's not a lot of places to run for him, but it looks like he's in a good spot.
Well, and he's a horse. You know, he's a 6-year-old gelding, and he's a horse that just thrives on the work. All he does, he's just a check earner. Second, third, fourth.
Yeah,
second, third, fourth.
He's
a horse that he pays the bills.
He keeps trying. He's honest.
Well, Javier Contreras, thrilled to get a chance to talk about the Barber Fritchie. And one more step up the ladder, a grade three for Late Night Powwow, a grade two now, and potential for the grade one, the Madison at Keeneland next time. Keep her healthy, happy, and look forward to seeing you and talking again soon.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Javier Contreras and Late Night Powwow, who should be getting way more love than she's been getting. I people even realize that there's a that there's a 4-year-old filly out there that's 11 for 12. She's a half a length away from being 12 for 12. Really nice. It'd be nice to see her get the next level. And from a figure standpoint, she just keeps improving. Late Night Powwow. And there's some horses to follow next couple of days. Contreras, well entered tonight and tomorrow. at Chucktown. Let's take a break. You know who likes Chucktown? Seth Merrow. Seth would bet on anything. Go to him and catch up. Haven't talked to him since Vegas. Seth Merrow next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
On Sirius XM Radio.
On to songs that I put in the rotation and you get tired of. I don't get tired of this song. I really don't. I'm glad. Okay. Glad you pulled that out. And we're going to, before we get to Seth, got to put Seth on hold a minute, because we've been looking forward to a update. I mentioned this, I think, yesterday. Did I mention it yesterday? That Jack D'Amico was going to join us from Georgia. And I was in Savannah, as you know, and we spent 2.5 days. And while I was able to bet, on my phone, it sure would be nice to go to a off track parlor at, maybe one in a restaurant setting, maybe. The work that's been going in to the Horse Racing Georgia effort, and we've been talking about it now for several years. Jack D'Amico joins us. And, Jack, when did we first start talking about this? How many years has it been?
Steve, it's got to be 4 years ago.
Oh, I think it's more.
Could have been longer, yeah.
I think it's longer. I think the first time you reached out, and I bet you it's well, when was Mucho Macho Man? Because it's got to fall in line with him.
That's right. It is longer than 4 years.
And, yeah.
And Dean is still an active part of our legislative progress.
Well, and really, for the first time, I mean, there's been, there's been initiatives, there's been nibbles and some, potential, but it really feels like there's some rubber meeting the road this time. Give everybody an update on where things stand.
Absolutely. You're right. We're making great progress. Our legislative bills have passed the first hurdle. They got through the Economic Development and Tourism Committee of the Senate, and most importantly, it got through the second committee in the Senate, the Rules Committee. So there's a chance it would come to a vote on the Senate floor very soon. Steve, we've got two different pieces of legislation. I'll try to be very brief. Senate Bill 45 is called the Rural Georgia Jobs and Growth Act, and it essentially sets up us to have pari-mutuel horse racing in the state, potentially at three locations to begin with. We would build a $250 million project in the greater Atlanta area and have the right to also build two additional facilities of about $150 million each in other parts of Georgia down the road. And the good news is that this is going to be privately funded and with no public dollars. The second one is really the one that's been a sticking point with me for years and years. It's called Senate Referendum 84. And simply stated, Steve, it lets the people of Georgia say yes or no on pari-mutuel horse racing in Georgia. The governor doesn't have to sign it. The Senate and the House don't have to own it. It just could be put on the next general election as a constitutional amendment and let people say yes or no. Each year, I think I've shared with you that we run these independent polls, and the latest one says that 76% of people in Georgia would like to see horse racing, and 68% of people in Georgia would like the right to vote on it. So, yes, you're right. It's close, and it's been a long time, but we're kind of holding our breath. We've got to make sure we have the right number of votes in the Senate. We have a great new governor, and we think that he's not going to oppose it, unlike previous governors. So we're excited but cautiously optimistic right now.
Have you a sense, Jack, of what has – what is responsible for the steady shift, the moving the needle in the positive direction? I brought up last month, I think, when this came up, and I speculated what Georgia could mean to overall handle in the country, and I wasn't sure what the population was, and one of our listeners fired back 10 million. Georgia known, I think, really in this era as a place where, you know, people are coming from other parts of the country. So I'm wondering how much of this groundswell is from, you know, people that are new to Georgia and would like to be able to wager, you know, within the confines of the borders. You know, what is, I suppose, the all the advertising and all the publicity, public relations efforts. There was the visit by Mucho Macho Man himself to Atlanta.
Right.
The billboards. I mean, what do you sense in even anecdotally it has been key to getting to this juncture?
Well, I think it's all of the above, Steve. And there's a greater awareness of why Atlanta is just almost a no-brainer for horse racing. It's the midway point between New York, Kentucky, and Florida. Our vision would be to have a boutique track meet twice a year. There are a lot of transplanted people from other states who are for this. There's an awful lot of people who are owners and breeders that are kind of below the radar screen here in Georgia.
That's a good point.
That like myself and some of my partners, we have to breed in Kentucky or Pennsylvania or Florida just because of their wonderful breeder programs. And I think it's all of what you described, an influx of people from other states and just a greater awareness of what could happen. We commissioned an economic study that shows, you know, thousands and thousands of jobs that would be generated by the passage of this legislature, and up to $1 billion in economic funds for the state. And people are starting to take notice of this. And also, we've had a change in, I think, this new governor is really good, and we've had a change in the Senate and the House. So I think, you know, we're holding our breath, but things seem to be leaning in the right direction. We may know more next week, but fingers crossed, we're making progress.
Now, the people that have been, you know, working in just nonstop, and in the face of what at times felt like overwhelming odds, too. I mean, just the, you know, the hurdles that were being put in place. But I the rural jobs and the rural economic engine aspect, having literally just driven, you know, through the you know, a portion of the state on my way to Savannah from Mobile, you know, it there is a lot to be said for what it could do for rural Georgia if there's going to, you know, be the seeds of a breeding industry, and you know, the care, just even the care and maintenance of the turning out of horses, and you know, with the initiative of this kind, I imagine the sport horse community would latch on as well. And you know, there's a lot of overlap, and they're just, you've got the steeplechase that comes to Georgia twice a year as well. I mean, the seeds are planted, and then you fold in what the handle numbers would potentially represent, and there's a lot of reasons to see this through to the end zone. So I'm very excited for you, Jack, and as always, appreciate, you know, keeping us up to up to speed. I know that the industry, you know, the industry's watching, and certainly the ADW companies would love to start marketing to Georgia residents.
Absolutely. It's exciting. Even as we speak, Dean Reeves and Carl Buchart and Tyler Alexander and Fred Fletcher, some of our board guys, are down there at the Senate just, you know, pressing the flesh and telling these senators how important it is. And if I might put in a plug of sorts, if any of your listeners are Georgians and they're in favor of this, this would be a perfect time to look up and call your senator and say, we're in favor of this, because it's been our experience that the more they hear from the constituents, the more they want to get behind these programs. So again, thanks to you for all you've done for us, and fingers crossed.
Well, and I'll put up the link for those of you that have not visited the website when we've discussed it over the years, GAGeorgiaHorseRacing.org. And there is a link, find your senator by zip code, and they'll provide the mailing address, the email address for you to, and phone number for you to get in contact with your representative in the state. And as we learned from the initiatives when it came to changing the tax withholding on a federal level, that comment period, it was very much noted that the, I think, 12,000 letters that came in via a system like this went a long way to impressing the Treasury Department at the time that, you know, it's an area of concern and had real support. So I'm sure the same would be the case when it came to, you know, the Georgia legislative leaders as well. So I'll put those links up as well, Jack, and we'll certainly catch up with you along the way, either in Florida or in Kentucky. We see you at the racetrack, but let us know the minute anything new develops and as things progress.
Okay, Steve, my pleasure, and thanks again. You're a great support.
Not at all. Georgia Horse Racing and Jack, and of course, mentioned Dean and Patty Reeves and Steve Crane, the executive director. And there's been people who have been so dedicated to trying to make this happen. And even without the idea of an equine facility, it would be a mixed use concept with some racing, obviously, but also some equine sport potential, etc. And they've, if you haven't seen the plans that they've developed, they're incredible. But the economic potential of Georgia coming online as a jurisdiction for parimutuel wagering, I mean, it's extensive. I mean, we'll have to figure out what that, what a 10 million, the population of 10 million would mean in handle to the industry. So this is one we've been tracking it. Casey's going through the files. He says it's 6 years we've been watching Georgia Horse Racing, trying to make it push the peanut, as we've said. And we tracked, don't forget, we tracked Dennis Drazen and the sports betting topic for years and years when it looked like it would never happen. And that domino fell, and Georgia's going to happen too. Let's take a break. Now we'll go find Seth Merrow. We hope. All right. Seth next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
The races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. Up all night from Kasabian, and certainly that we could actually use that more regularly as a theme for Seth Merrow. When I was getting ready to, I wasn't leaving Las Vegas, but I get up at 3 o'clock typically in Vegas at 6 a.m. Eastern time, and so there was that morning. I went down 3:15 or so, 3:30, and I go to the Starbucks out on the strip there, and then I come back in, and who's wandering back into the Treasure Island after hours of gala activity but Seth Merrow?
It was Vegas.
Vegas, baby.
That was a little later than usual, but we had wrapped up. That was Sunday night after all the activities, so we'd wrapped up. So I went a little late night in Vegas.
Well, we haven't talked. I was traveling the last 2 weeks, and
how was the trip?
Oh, spectacular! Just unbelievable. It's so much fun.
I saw your Twitter feed where you said the road trip had pointed out to you that now most men in their 20s through 40s have the bushy beard. I didn't realize that was as much, but I have seen recently, and throughout my life, I have had and not had facial hair. I've never done the bushy look. I'm not big on the bushy look.
I did that from, where was I? I was in the airport at, I think we'd gotten into Baltimore. And during the trip from Vegas, you know, through New Orleans, through the rest of it, Mobile, and I was just struck by how many, 25 to 40 year olds, basically, it seems, are sporting that beard to the point, whether it's James Harden, Pete Fornatel look. I mean, you can pick your favorite, bearded character, but it's just all over the place. I mean, it's crazy. I can grow a beard, and I've had one before, but I've got a very thin mustache. I've got kind of a Clark Gable, Howard Hughes type mustache, and so it just doesn't work.
Yeah, the pencil thin mustache makes you look evil.
which I don't mind. I had that in Montreal, kind of a goatee. Almost, I'll tell you what I was trying to emulate was the Jack Cassidy look, which is just spectacular.
Oh, there you go. A throwback to what, 60s TV, I guess you would. He would be married to Mrs. Partridge.
Shirley Jones, yes.
Shirley Jones.
David, the late David Cassidy.
Tie into racing. I don't know exactly what it was, but do they still run the Shirley Jones down in Florida?
You know what? I think they've renamed the Shirley Jones. I think it became maybe the Sugar Swirl or one of the, you know, one of the self-directed names I think they.
And what about the same time that appeared on the Joe Namath was there? I don't think they run the Joe Namath anymore either.
I can't remember the. I mean, not in forever.
Yeah.
The Shirley Jones has been run more recently than that than the Joe Namath.
Man,
for sure.
Look that up.
Yeah. Shirley Jones. I think it's the Sugar Swirl, but it might be the Ginger Punch, or they're all named after. They're either named after, you know, Adina horses or dining rooms the properties, or kind of, you know. Soon there'll be a Christine. I cannot even anymore. They pushed Christine Lee's out of the building.
I didn't realize that until I went down to the Pegasus. Yes, it's in one of those restaurants out behind the paddock now.
Yes. Well. Got to make room for the people in those beards. and the companions that come along with that, I guess. That's very funny. So you're Vegas. I haven't given you the chance to. We were supposed to do it live, and I had electrical issues that day. But your final postscript to your Vegas experience.
Well, it's just live. It lives up to what came through when I used to listen to you on the radio. And I've said it before. I had Pete Fornatella on with me, a week or so ago, and we were kind of recapping that a little bit. And I said, I first heard you were going to go out there and do it on the radio, you know, the thought is, how exciting is that, radio at a horse racing tournament? But man, it worked. It has been very good, and you guys have done a great job year after year, and it comes through the radio just how much fun it is, and looking at the leaderboard, but more importantly, having the folks come over during the day. And when Sunday rolls around, some of the folks who didn't make the cut sit in for a while. Last year, the Matisse brothers were great. But just hearing the enthusiasm, and clearly, there's an $800,000 prize, so there's plenty of competition. But you get the feeling of the camaraderie in the room and a large group of like-minded people. And, you know, that came through on the radio, and it certainly came through being there live, sitting there and having the people come up and talk with me during the afternoon for some cut-ins and whatnot. It was fun talking to handicappers and kind of hearing some of their theories and their processes and whatnot. Just you got what they were getting out of the weekend as well. A lot of the first-timers who, for the first time, said, gee, you know, made new friends sitting at the table I was sitting at and whatnot. And then it was just that last... And I said to Pete, Fornthal, I was saying, wait, I think it was Jim Mulvihill that sent out a tweet a couple of days afterwards and says, you know, how giving a hat tip to everybody who was there, including you, obviously, but said, how does this not get more coverage? And I said to Pete, gee, it seems like, you know, watch that final table. It seems like somebody could videotape that and cut it down to a dramatic 30 or 60 minutes and make it worthwhile for somebody to broadcast. And he pointed out that this year's was a little more dramatic than normal. Maybe it wouldn't always hold up to that, but boy, that last table this year was fabulous. But, you know, seven races, and unfortunately the last race was scratch reduced down to a field of four with a move from the turf to the dirt. That was a little bit unfortunate, but the six races leading up to it, there was just lead changes, and it was as good as it could get. And so for me, my first time out there lived up to all expectations.
Yeah, you bring up a couple of very salient points, and the really strange and distressing portion of this year's event, the fact that, that the forum didn't see its way to report anything on it is sad. You know, considering how instrumental Steve Crist and the paper were in establishing the NHC and, you know, growing it to the, you know, to the level that it has and the presence that it has. Very, very odd that, you know, that, that horse, I mean, it's a horse player celebration. And, you know, how is that not fodder for, you know, for coverage in the paper? That is, that was not lost on people, no doubt.
And it really, horse racing celebration is a great way to put it, because if folks haven't been there and are just listening over the radio, I mean, we were across the, excuse me, across the ballroom from you. If anybody knows how to get rid of a cough, they should let me know, by the way. I've had this cough since Christmas time. It's driving me nuts. But we were right across the ballroom from you, and we were up on an elevated platform, and so I had a great look at the entire ballroom, and it was huge. But then there was an auxiliary ballroom. And so, you know, you get 670-some, as I say, like-minded people there. It really is absolutely a celebration of the game.
Well, we are already marching toward 2020, and qualifications are happening daily. And the name that came up earlier today, I'll mention with the conversation we had with Pete, and I referenced Imad Himia. And Imad is going to join us tomorrow. He's had an amazing 2 weeks. NHC qualification this past weekend and the previous week, BCBC qualification. And Seth, you've probably rubbed elbows with Imad over the years. He was the 2012 Battle of Saratoga winner for $100,000.
Oh, nice. And you know, it's interesting to see the repeat names that were in the room again this year, and the at the dinner, the Hall of Fame inductee talking about, oh, you know, I had to miss a couple of holidays because I hadn't made it in yet. It got to be around Thanksgiving or Christmas time, and I had to fly out and try to get in. And you look at these guys who make it year after year, and it shows the level of handicapping, but then it also shows the level of competition and handicapping at the tournament that some of these guys, you know, don't make it to that final day. And that was another interesting part, the final day. You know, the winner was brand new there. The Albany gentleman who made it to third, Matt Bagpolgi, who I'm now 4 weeks in and I'm pretty comfortable with the name now. But that was nice to see. It referred to as young guys, which in that room they kind of were. They were both in their 30s. But they were brand new. But it's nice to see, as you say, somebody who, like this person who won the Saratoga contest and now has qualified for the NHC and the BCBC. It just goes to show there's a certain level of talent there. And when they do it year after year, you can just kind of look and tip your cap to them because it is difficult.
Well, Seth, I wanted to take advantage of the visit to maybe hit a couple of things. And today I'm going to check because they were worried about some weather. But Gulfstream in Tampa today, did you?
I looked at the rainbow at Gulfstream and did put a little like $43 ticket together. But now I have to redo before I got on with you. I checked and they are off the turf.
Okay.
The turf race is kind of
That maiden sixth, most notably, the maiden sixth was really interesting because you had, I couldn't believe how much pedigree was on display here. This was going to be a turf sprint, and there were just top to bottom, there were major siblings and dams on display. And I'm going to quickly see if the changes are done, and how many horses came out of this?
Yeah, they got 1, 7, 8, 11, and 12 are out.
Yes, 1, 7, 8, 11, 12. All right, so I'm going to let me do some crossouts and start wherever you want.
Well, go back to the fifth and that Rainbow. That stays on the dirt. I went 4-7, 6-1 on the Rainbow ticket. I looked at. I used the 4-7 and the 6. The Golden Prince. A little bit of breeding there, a couple of workouts underneath that are okay. It's just one of those races where the horses that have experience just aren't much, so wanted to look for a fresh face, and I went in that direction. You don't know what you're going to get at the 16 claiming level, but again, trainer does okay with first-time starters, doing okay at the meet, Barbosa, and so I tilted in that direction, but I'll also use Guerreron, who has some back numbers that are pretty good. The last race, not so much, but you know, maybe had a little trouble there. I think overall that one, that last number looks like an aberration. So I'll use that one. That's, who is the morning line favorite? St. Larned with the early speed. And the early speed hasn't tried a wet track yet, but that early speed may be a little more potent on an off track. So, again, I went 4-7, 6-1, but on the Rainbow I'm going to use the 4-7 and 6.
All right. What else?
I'll plow through. In the sixth, and again, I'm going to take a second look at these races that are off the turf, but I have made some preliminary thoughts. I'm going to go 13-6 in here. The horse coming in from the also eligibles hasn't tried the dirt yet, and the turf workouts say, you know, I just find it intriguing that Wesley Ward decided to keep this horse in. Now we'll see as the day progresses if he changes his mind. But by Scott Daddy, you know, maybe okay on the dirt. The first two races of the career, it's interesting that Wesley Ward went against the boys. So I thought there might be some talent there. And again, I found it a little bit interesting that he lets this stay in with what looks more like a turf runner. But I'll throw the six in as well. By Spikestown, I think the breeding is there that this horse may be okay on the dirt, may benefit from the career debut and move forward in the second start of the career. So again, right at this point, I'm still kind of trying to decide on these dirt races, but I'm going to use the 13 and the
well,
6.
I think you better take a hard look at the 3. This filly is a half to Roy H. And Mike Maker, there's a couple of gate bullet works.
Yep.
This filly might have some speed that just pops this. They're only going 5 furlongs. I don't know if you're going to get 10-1. The morning line has really, really struggled down there. But Vinca, for me, the 3, especially now that it's off the grass.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. So I'll probably toss that one in as well. As I say, I'm still deciding on those races. 7th race I thought was wide open. And in the 7th race, I was going to use the 6 and the 3. I have it 6-3, 7-1. And again, originally it was the ticket I had was $43 and change, I think. So I was kind of cutting down in some spots. I think this is more wide open than to feel confident with a couple, but I just wanted to keep the ticket affordable. So I had a 6-3, 7-1, but I was going to use the 6 and the 3. Diamond Bachelor has some nice early speed. Comes out of a couple of decent races over the last two starts. I thought the numbers stacked up well with this bunch and drops back to the 25 level of the claim 2 back for Navarro and Chatamont in the second spot. Another one with some early speed that may be well placed throughout for Juarez. So, and with nice improving numbers over the past few that stack up nicely with this bunch. So again, it is a very competitive race, but just to keep my ticket affordable, I was going to use the 6 and the 3.
You better use the 4. My man, Chuckles, Chuck Simon.
Yep.
For Roger Satina, Deputy Czar, coming back to the main track after the turf try. And I think Chuck would prefer that this race would have been the one turn mile. But, certainly Deputy Czar, likes it wet and, you know, there's some pace in front of him, and Chris Landeros can kind of set up shop behind the speed. I want some Deputy Czar at 8-1.
All right. 8th race, again, changing over to the dirt. I went 4-10-8. I haven't quite decided what I'm going to use on the ticket yet, but on the dirt, the Surf Shack. Race 2 back was okay. Number-wise, it was very good as compared to what this horse usually does on the turf. It was maybe against a little bit better, so I went to that race 2 back on the dirt up at Hawthorne and thought, well, we'll use that to to move forward from. Something Bird comes out of a good dirt race last time, a turf to dirt move. But more importantly, I Rod Ortiz on board. Man, he rides well down there, and so that attracted my attention. Also used the main track only horse, Rizo, who was main track only for Dale. So I just couldn't ignore that one with some class relief as well. So I'll use the 4-10 and the 8 most likely in the 8.
I got. I didn't look at the 8th or 9th.
9th race, 4, 11, 10, and 8. Let me just turn my page. And yeah, I used all of them on my ticket. The 4 is Scam. There are some back numbers that are very good and may move closer to those, getting Irad on board this afternoon. Went out to the 11, Mike Joshua, getting some class relief. Nice positional early speed. The class relief should be beneficial of Jose Ortiz on board. Little meatball, has to get back to some back numbers. But like the top pick, I think with Jose on board, maybe we can pop back to those numbers. And Doc Tane, I just think, the claim for De La Serta. He's pretty good with that angle. And this horse, I think, if you look down the page, has numbers that compete with these. So I'll use all four of those, 4, 11, 10, and 8 in the 9th. And then we wrap it up in the 10th. 10th, I looked out to the main track only, 13. And that was really as far as I got when I looked at this. And I may just go that far. So I ride on board a horse that I think is pretty good, given what we saw last time in a maiden 25. Takes a little half step down now, the claiming ladder, with the move to the main track. Maybe I'll just rely. I don't like to single in the last leg of a sequence like this. But Sensational Zip might be okay as the main track only horse.
I think the other horse to look at is that ProQuester. That's kind of the other, the other obvious type. Looking at that race in February, beginning of February, I know it was against Lesser, but at least
I'll talk about there. Have you talked about it this week? Just so people haven't seen it, that race by Spinoff on Friday at Tampa, the Fletcher.
At Tampa,
horse.
I mentioned it a little bit in passing, actually. This
did
morning.
Did you see a number? I haven't seen a number yet.
Yes,
it was very good. I would tell people to
84.
Go back and look.
84 buyer.
They tipped their hand a little bit when Velasquez ships over on a Friday to race in the second race. But the horse looked very good. As I say, visually it was impressive.
Well, and sometimes you. You know, your immediate assumption is that they went to Tampa against Lesser, but Fletcher made it very clear what the circumstance was, and the same thing was true with the horse that he sent to Intrepid Heart, that he sent to Oaklawn. If the race isn't going to come up at Gulfstream, you can't wait around. You don't have time to be waiting right now for a race to be put on the overnight. So that's
what
that
time
was
of year
about.
Last year it was Magnum Moon over at Tampa.
That's
about
right.
2 years
that's
ago,
right.
Was always dreaming. So you can't discount those Fletcher horses at Tampa this time of year.
Exactly right, Seth Barrow. Everybody, Capital OTB and Equidaily.com, and longtime At the Races contributor, and now a Vegas regular.
I appreciate you dragging me out there, and I enjoyed the whole thing. And the late night, the last night, was particularly good.
You don't have to worry, says Seth. Seth remains upright late into the evening. He's got plenty of practice from his July and August. He's going to have to spread it out. I think 2 days off is going to be good for you.
I think so, too. I agree completely.
Oh, so much fun. Well, what a fun morning. Seth Merrow, everybody, and Jack D'Amico with the Georgia Report, and things inching closer in Georgia. We talked to Javier Contreras, a late-night powwow. That's what Seth and I had, a late-night powwow, right there in the lobby of the Treasure Island. Sid Fernando, of course, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, Pete for Natal, and Jeff Bondi. Sparkyville. Good luck if you're playing today. Looking forward to that overnight coming out later with the big fields. When they have a big day like this, usually it's around 4 o'clock. It seems to take a little extra time to put together these big cards at Gulfstream. So might not be till later in the afternoon, but good luck if you're playing. You got Tampa and a bunch of other places. Tampa and Gulfstream, we already mentioned. Who'd we miss? I'll tell you momentarily. Mahoning Valley. Charlestown. Now, Charlestown tonight, Contreras' horses, Delta, Penn National, Sam Houston, and Turf Paradise. HRRN coverage today, 3 o'clock. It's Wednesday. Look forward to that, and look forward to be back with you tomorrow. Steve Haskin, Tony Black. We got to get to Rich Eng. Somehow we went to Vegas and never saw Rich. I don't know. Can't explain it. Amit Hamaya is going to join us, who's been red hot on the contest front. Dick Powell tomorrow. Hong Kong. They're getting ready for the Hong Kong Derby. That's a lot of radio show. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value.